welcome to the call today.
Hi, Kim. Thanks for having me.
That's okay. I just want to tell the audience a little bit about you, Jim. Jim Taylor holds a PhD in psychology. He speaks to parents, students, and educators internationally and is the author of 10 books, including two parenting books. One of them is called Positive Pushing, How to Raise a Successful Child. And the book in question today is called Your Children Are Under Attack. Now, that name is very interesting, Jim. Please tell me, what prompted you to write this book, Your Children Are Under Attack?
Well, over the last decade or so, as I've traveled the country speaking to kids and parents and educators and also in my own private practice, I've seen a growing influence of popular culture on kids. And it really has coincided with the growth of our technology. I mean, it used to be TV and radio, but now, of course, it's the internet, websites, text messaging, YouTube, et cetera, et cetera. So the power of popular culture to influence kids has grown significantly, and the ability of parents to influence their kids because of the growth of popular culture has shrunk.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting, Jim. I have an 11-year-old daughter, and as she walked out the door to school today, she had her iPod on, and she actually had headphones over her head as she walked out the door, and it just made me think, gee, I wonder what music she's listening to, because, you know, it just goes in. So would you say, is it true that popular culture wants to destroy our families?
Well, not in the sort of active conscious sense, because popular culture doesn't exactly have a soul or a conscience, but that is, in my view, one of the side results of popular culture's growing influence over kids and families. Because so much of the messages that popular culture conveys to kids is quite conflicting with the values and the beliefs and the attitudes that I think most families want to convey to their kids. And when I talk about values, I don't mean the hot-button issues you hear about in the media. What I'm talking about are the values that pretty much everybody in the world can agree are important. Responsibility, respect, family, love, compassion, hard work, all those things. And unfortunately, the messages that kids are getting from popular culture very significantly conflict with many of those healthy values and beliefs.
Mm-hmm. And would you say that it's a very subtle subconscious thing?
Well, it's a little bit of both. In my book, I talk about two influences that popular culture has. One is what I call loudspeaker influences, and that's where it's the big posters, the big billboards that kids see. It's the ads on TV and radio where they're just being bombarded with these messages, buy this stuff, wear this stuff, eat this stuff. But then I think at least kids and parents can see those because they're quite obvious. I think the real dangerous messages that popular culture sends are what I call the stealth messages. And these are the messages that are wrapped in the fun characters, the entertaining music, the attractive people in all the ads on TV and the radio and in magazines and newspapers. And these ads are very sophisticated. Popular culture spends billions of dollars every year figuring out ways to manipulate and brainwash kids. And these ads tap into kids' most basic needs. Needs of self-esteem, peer acceptance, and physical attractiveness.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. So in the book, you place a great deal of blame on culture. Now, when in your mind did our culture go all wrong?
Well, I suppose that it probably the tipping point arrived shortly after the advent of the Internet. Certainly there had been movement in that direction with many more TV channels. But before the Internet, kids didn't have this 24/7 exposure to information outside of parents' control. So I would say the creation of the Internet, which was around 1996, was the start of it. And every year, almost every month, there's new technology coming out that gives kids the ability to tap into popular culture and to get these messages from popular culture that just aren't healthy.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting. It's almost hard to go through a day without using some form of technology, isn't it?
Well, there are kids now who were born, in fact, your daughter, where she doesn't know a life without mobile phones, internet, websites, and so on. So kids are just constantly surrounded by it, and they can't get away with, they can't get away from it.
Yeah, sometimes I have to be careful. My kids walk in the door from school and they just want to turn on the TV, and it's like sometimes I have to put a sign on my TV, no TV this week. And until I do that, their kids can't actually explore different possibilities. Sometimes I have to be very firm with them, and once I say the TV's banned for the week, then I see them start to go outside and pick up a ball and a bat and pick up their Lego blocks or something. But it does, I feel like it takes a conscious effort on behalf of the adult to really steer your kids away from these things.
Oh, tremendously so, because the fact is popular culture is not going to do what's best for your kids. And the sad thing, and this is part of those stealth messages that I talked about, is that popular culture sends the message to kids and parents that we care about you, we want what's best for you. That is popular culture saying that, and we'll take care of you. But popular culture doesn't care about our children. It cares about one thing, making money. And it will do anything and say anything to make more money. So really the only power that parents have over their kids is in their direct interactions with them. We're not going to change popular culture. We're not going to set back the clocks and take away the internet. So it's all up to parents to have the wherewithal, the commitment, the belief in their values to set limits on kids and make sure that they're not in front of their TV all the time, or they're not tweeting all the time, or texting, or watching videos.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's, I guess what you're saying is that it's up to the parent, and we can either choose to be proactive in this, or if we take a back seat, we know which direction our children are going to go.
Well, I think the point you're making about being proactive is essential, because if we aren't proactive, then popular culture is just going to overwhelm our kids, and we can't play defense with popular culture, because it's too big, it's omnipresent, it's intense, and it's unrelenting. And so what we need to do is do everything we can proactively in raising our kids, so they might be exposed to these things, but they're not. It's not going to really influence who they are and how they feel about themselves and what they do with their lives.
Mm-hmm. So do you think that society today is about avoiding responsibility? And if so, what can we do to help change that?
Well, as I touched on, it's probably impossible to get change to occur at a societal level. Money runs the world. And concern about what's best for our kids comes a distant 15th. And so at a larger level, I'm pretty pessimistic about our ability to right ourselves at this point and get our priorities straight. So does our society abdicate responsibility? I think our society as a whole, even our governments, are largely incapable of taking that responsibility, because they are beholden to corporate interests. Mm-hmm. Now, from what I understand, in some countries, I know in England, for example, they don't allow television ads marketed to kids on Saturday mornings and in the afternoon after school. So certainly
That's
there are some
right.
cultures, and I don't know how this is in Australia, but there are certainly some countries who attempt to make a stand, and that's an incredibly powerful force. Because what that means is that parents aren't alone. They don't have to fight this fight alone. And so if governments can get behind it, that's great. But I can assure you in the U.S., it's not going to happen.
Not the norm. I know here in Australia, like I have four children, and when they were little at Woolworths, I used to always pick one aisle for the checkout, because it was a lolly confectionery free aisle, as in at the checkout. You didn't have to battle with your kids to stop them from touching the lollies. And there were like 16 aisles to check out at, and there was only one that was confectionery free. And all parents would make a beeline for that aisle because they didn't want to have the struggle with their children.
Yeah, and Kim, I'll tell you, it absolutely kills me here in the States. I have two little girls. They're four, they're almost five and almost three. And we go into the grocery store, and, of course, the displays are set up where all the candies and all the kids' stuff are at their height in the shopping cart.
Yeah.
And then
that's terrible.
We get to the checkout line, and not only is one side of the checkout line filled with candy at that height, but on the other side are magazines that display mostly attractive women about, you know, the celebrity magazines and the fashion magazines, where it's all about getting the guy, losing the weight, being fat, having sex. And it's like, I want to put blinders on my kids when I go through the checkout line.
Yeah, yeah, it certainly doesn't help with children and self-esteem. Now, I want to talk about some of the unhealthy messages that society conveys to our children. In my mind, I guess if we can identify them, that's the first step in making amends. Now, firstly,
I was just going to say that in terms of the biggest messages, and I outlined several of them in my book, but if you just look at on television in particular, and I think reality TV is my poster child for all that's wrong with our culture today,
mm-hmm.
and disrespect, dishonesty, greed, win at all cost, humiliation. I mean, reality TV these days, at least in the U.S., it's about humiliation.
Mm.
Whether it's The Biggest Loser or American Idol. And so these messages that kids get, also for young women, about being, you have to be beautiful and thin, and you have to have the right stuff to feel good about yourself, and you won't be accepted if you don't drink this or eat that, then, or wear this or have that this technology. The kids are being bombarded by these messages, and these messages are fundamentally value messages.
Mm-hmm.
And,
yep.
and I really emphasize values, and again, not the kind of hot-button values you hear about, at least in the U.S., by talking heads in the media and by religious fanatics and politicians. I'm talking about values that I'm pretty sure we all want our kids to develop. And if you think about what values are, Kim, they're
mm-hmm.
pretty much the roadmap that guide where our kids go, because
mm-hmm.
kids will go in the direction of what they value. And so if they have values like greed or dishonesty or discontent or lack of compassion, then they're going to go down that road.
Mm-hmm.
And that, for me, is the most insidious and harmful aspect of the messages from popular culture.
Right. That's interesting. I'm just actually writing that down, Jim, what you said. Kids will go in the direction of what they value.
Mm-hmm.
That's so true. And does this mean as parents that we need to be proactive in, let me say, maybe sitting down and actually talking to our kids and creating a counterculture within our family, a set of family values that we agree to abide by? Do you think that is a start of a solution?
It is very much so, and you put it very well. And the phrase I use in my book is that to counter popular culture, families need to create what I call a family value culture,
okay.
where parents talk to their kids about values,
mm-hmm.
what values are, why they're important, what are some values that they believe in, what are some
mm-hmm.
unhealthy values that they're going to be exposed to, and then engage kids in different activities that will teach some of those values.
Okay.
Whether it's the value of responsibility around the house, picking up your toys, bringing your plate to the sink, taking out the trash,
mm-hmm.
being kind to your sister, the value of
right.
kindness, doing your homework, the value of hard work,
mm-hmm.
helping others in the community who are less advantaged is the value of compassion,
mm-hmm.
and plus being role models. Most powerfully, kids pick up messages from their parents, not from what their parents necessarily do to their kids or what they say to their kids, but just who the parents are. And if
mm-hmm.
the parents are communicating certain healthy values, then kids are probably going to adopt those. At the same time, I've seen it very often where parents are sending very unhealthy messages to their kids.
Mm-hmm.
An example is a mom where it's all about her daughter looking beautiful and having the most fabulous outfits.
Yeah.
That, for me, is not a very good value.
Yeah, yeah, I can see that. It's interesting. I wonder what you have to say about this, Jim. One of my family values is compassion. And a few years back, about 3 years ago, the family and I decided to go to a soup kitchen and serve soup for the homeless one day a week, like in the evening. And we agreed upon that. And we did it for a period of 6 months. And that was my way of showing the kids, hey, this is how we show compassion. This is a family value. But 3 years later, my kids have grown up more. They're 18, 16, 14, and nearly 12 now. I tried to get them going down, two doors down to the end of our street to say hello to some old people at Christmas time, and they didn't want a bar of it. And I'm just thinking, is this as kids grow older and mature, or did I make some mistake that they no longer feel the same compassion that they want to do those things?
Well, I'm in no position, Kim, to judge your parenting. I will say, though, that it's really important that parents consistently send that message and have an expectation that this, as long as you're in this family, this is what we expect of you. If you don't like it, well, that's too bad. And then also to explain to them about the importance of it. I think having your kids going to soup kitchens and helping with the disadvantaged is incredibly powerful, because kids get to see that not everybody is comfortable and has all the advantages.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a real eye-opener. One particular value that I spend a lot of time on is the value of gratitude.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that, with kids these days growing up in affluent environments is not that they're spoiled, because every parent wants to give the best to their kids. Some parents have more to give.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a difference between being spoiled and having spoiled brats.
Yeah.
And the difference is this. Spoiled kids, whatever they're given by their parents, A, they take full advantage of what they're given, and B, they're appreciative of it. And spoiled brats don't.
Yep.
And so that value alone for me is very, very powerful, the value of gratitude. And exposing kids to people who don't have those kind of advantages, that is one way to get kids to empathize and feel compassion.
Yeah, I would love to take my kids for like a missions trip overseas sometime to a third world country to see how some people actually live. I think an experience like that might really help kids to understand how lucky we are in countries like America and Australia. And I think it's so easy to take things for granted.
I agree.
Now, sometimes, Jim, this whole culture thing seems to make me feel a bit overwhelmed. Can you give me a key about how to not feel so overwhelmed about this horrible influence that is continually bombarding our kids?
Yeah, Kim, what you're experiencing is a feeling that pretty much all parents feel in Western culture, because the reality is that popular culture is this behemoth, this unrelenting monster that it just simply overwhelms you. I use the example of the orcs from Lord of the Rings.
Mm-hmm.
If you recall them, they knock 10 down and 100 more would come after them.
Yeah.
And so it is overwhelming. And I think the way to reduce some of that feeling of being overwhelmed is simply focus on small things.
Mm-hmm.
That if you focus on changing popular culture, my gosh, that's an impossible task. But if you focus on, okay, in my family, I'm going to identify three values.
Mm-hmm.
And
yep.
during the course of every week, I'm going to make sure my kids are exposed in some way, discussion, experience, through a particular movie or TV show that's educational, that will instill those values into my kids. So you have to start small and focus on just a couple of things, because that you have control over. That's not going to overwhelm you.
Yep. Oh, I see. Okay. That's great. And I guess it's good if we can have like family meetings on a regular basis. So you're saying that on a weekly basis, if we want to be really proactive, we need to be discussing these values and finding a way to outwork them in your life and in the life of your children.
Right, right. And not just talk about them, but get kids to immerse themselves in those values, like the soup kitchen, like having their chores around the house, which they see as burdens, but really are a way to communicate the value of family responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't have to be big things, but the more you can expose your kids to these, the more that they will become ingrained in them, and they'll adopt those values for themselves.
Do you know what I do, Jim, with my kids regarding this gratitude thing? I take every opportunity when the five of us are in the car together, because I've got them and they're trapped and they can't get away from me, and I say, okay, it's time to be grateful. and we go around in a circle and I say, I want everybody to say three things they're grateful for. And I find that, for me, as a parenting tool is great because I've got them in a confined space and they can't get away from me.
Yeah, that's a great one. One thing we do with our family is every night at dinner we hold hands and we have a moment of gratitude where I say, let's take a deep breath, close our eyes, and be grateful. And then once a week, usually, we'll each say something out loud what we're grateful for. So it's both a very family-oriented bonding thing, but it's also a very personal thing of my kids. Even though they're young, they understand the concept, and also for my wife and I to really make sure that in this life that we have, which is stressful and busy and has its struggles, that there's a lot to be grateful for.
Yes, I think sometimes as parents, life gets away on us, doesn't it? With nowadays parents having to work more than one job and both parents having to be out in the workforce, and kids are often left to their own devices, I think maybe it's more important than ever for us to get the groundwork right.
Well, I think it's certainly harder these days more than ever because parents these days, often both parents are working, sometimes multiple jobs. There's just less time and less energy that parents can devote to this sort of thing. And, you know, back in the day, you know, 20, 30, 40 years ago, parents weren't alone in this. They had their local neighbors, the local community, their houses of worship, if they're people of faith, their schools, their sports on their side. But now even a lot of those have gone to what I call the dark side of popular culture. And parents more than ever are left out in this wilderness alone to fight the good fight.
Yep. Yeah, I know that I always look for mentors around me, people in my community, people in my church that have been where I've gone with their children. In particular, there's a couple at church that have three boys the same age as my boys. And I'm always asking them questions because I feel like I can relate to someone with kids the same age, and you know, I feel very not afraid to seek help and to seek those people that can help me on my parenting journey, you know, with all the issues I have, whether it's regarding to culture or other things. I find it really helps me feel like I'm not alone on this journey.
Yeah, Kim, that's a very important point because, as you touched on earlier about feeling overwhelmed, another way to feel less overwhelmed is to surround yourself with like-minded people. That is, to enlist other people in your army. And those are, you know, other parents who have similar values. Again, send your kids to a school that supports your values, play houses of worship, sports activities, basically doing anything you can to surround your family with other people who can support the messages you're trying to send.
That's right. Who was it that said that saying, it takes a whole village to raise a child?
Hillary Clinton had a book that it called It Takes a Village, and I thoroughly agree with that. Whatever people think of Hillary Clinton, that message I think is very powerful.
Yeah, well, I certainly agree with that one. And me being a single parent with four kids, more than anything I need mentors and role models, not only around me, but around my children. And I know that I actively seek out mentors for each one of my children, mentors that are 2 or 3 years older than my kids, mentors that my kids can relate to. I often say, hey, who do you like to chat to at church? And I make sure that I hook up my kids with these people once every few weeks so that they have someone to be with. And I think that the culture that my kids is involved in at church anyway really helps mold my children. And I think it's really important that parents maybe seek out mentors and role models that they are happy with and do whatever they can to lean their children and make every opportunity. Like, I know there are some kids in my neighborhood that are not a good influence on my kids. And if my kids say, Mum, will you take me over to play with such and such? If I don't like that child or like the influence they have over my child's life, like, I won't make it easy for my kid to see them. But if my kid wants to play with someone that I know is an amazing influence, I'll bend over backwards to make the time. I'll jump in the car. I'll drive them 100 miles if necessary. Do you think that's okay that we can help our children in that way?
Oh, absolutely, because the fact is that very often parents communicate a good message, but kids don't, kids just don't like the messenger. And so the same message can be conveyed by somebody who they respect or at this particular moment connect to, whether it's another parent, a coach, a teacher, a member of the clergy, then who can send those same messages that you are, then it's more power to you because it means you've got more people in your corner sending those messages.
Isn't it amazing that the same message can be sent maybe first from the parent and second from a role model or mentor, and the child won't hear the parent, but the child will hear the mentor or the role model?
Yeah, well, that's the curse of being a parent.
Very interesting, isn't it? And I guess when our kids are younger, they tend to listen to the parent, but there comes an age, you know, 12, 13, and it's almost like somebody switches off something in their brain and they say, well, I'm a teenager now. I no longer need to listen to my parent.
Well, it's part of the separation process and the process of becoming independent. And, you know, hopefully in it, with a really good relationship with your kids, you can maintain, you can slowly give them more distance, but they will then come to you nonetheless, if knowing that they can trust you to help them to get where they want to go when they need help.
Yeah. No, that's good, I guess, as parents. We all strive for that. And, you know, something amazing, Jim, I have an 18-year-old. He just turned 18 2 days ago, and he's got himself a girlfriend recently. And I had a friend visiting one evening, and David came to me to tell me that he'd had his first kiss with his girlfriend. And my friend was totally blown away that my 18-year-old would share such a personal thing. And I said, well, look, you know, that's the way I've raised him, to be able to have that good relationship. And my friend was just totally blown away that an 18-year-old would share something so personal. But for me, it made me feel really privileged as a parent.
Yeah, and I think you should take that as a really good sign that you've done some good things with your 18-year-old, because not many 18-year-old guys are going to go to their parents and say, I just had my first kiss. because that kind of openness then gives you an opportunity to begin a conversation with him. Because invariably, certainly at 18, something after is going to come after the kiss. And if you haven't had those conversations, then in a way, he just gave you an opening. And that's a really powerful thing when kids can come to their parents and feel comfortable enough to talk to them about these things. Because kids, despite the fact that even kids down to 5, 6, 7, 8 years old, they look, talk, act, and dress like little adults. Mm-hmm. They're not. They're still scared little beings who are looking for guidance in a world that is increasingly more complicated and more scary. And
that's
so to have a relationship where the parents have that kind of relationship and trust is very powerful and is a wonderful influence on kids.
Mm. That's great what you said, Jim, about looking for the openings. And that's what I've done with my children over the years, and I think that's a real key for parents that – sometimes, I mean, maybe you agree with this, maybe you don't. Sometimes we can't orchestrate everything. We need to wait and take the cues off our children.
Oh, 100%. The older our kids get, the less control we have over them and the less influence we have over them. So it's more a matter of hopefully laying a good foundation early on and then just pick your openings. Look for those places where they say something and that's an indication that maybe they want to talk a little bit.
Yep.
And then draw it out of them. And a big part of that is listening, not just talking and telling them, but hearing what they have to say and then responding based upon where they're at, not where you think they should be at or where you want them to be at.
That's good. That's excellent. Now, just you said about good foundations, Jim. Do you want to just mention something about maybe parents that have struggled and feel like they've really failed miserably up to this point in time? What would you say to them about it not being too late to turn things around and to start with a new foundation?
Right. I will tell you, Kim, it's never too late. It's certainly hard. The older kids get, once they get in their teens, it's really hard to turn them around. But certainly in my work with families, I've seen kids who are going down a bad road because their parents basically let them, where parents all of a sudden start to set boundaries, start to establish expectations, begin to have consequences. Initially, the kids go berserk. because all of a sudden there's these things they've never had place in them before, and they push against it. But if parents are committed and they have the resolve and they don't give in, typically within a couple of months, kids realize that, oh, my parents aren't giving in, so fighting just won't work. And also I think that kids who are brought up without a lot of boundaries or expectations or consequences, I think they grow up afraid. They might not act it, and they often have great bravado and great attitude, but they're scared. Because the reason why parents need to set expectations and have boundaries is because they think their kids are all these mature, wonderful little adults, but they're not. They're still children. And and even though kids will often push back when all of these things are initially placed upon them, I found that if parents stay committed, that the kids come around because they realize a couple of things. First of all, that their parents are doing it for the kids' best interest. Second, what they're feeling at that present time isn't making them feel very good. It's not making them happy, and it's not getting them where they want to go. So after a while, once they get over the shock of this new world that they've been placed in, then very often they will respond positively. And then parents have just done an amazing thing because they've changed a kid's lives, their kids' lives. When they were on a bad road, they're now on a good road. And that's I don't know if there's a greater gift parents can give their kids than to get them either at the beginning of their life or later on a good road.
That's great. So just in helping the parent that thinks they've really botched up that are going to make some changes after listening to this. Now, I know there are certain areas in my kids' life that I've let go. Some areas I'm very good on, other areas I've let go. And for me personally, I've found that if I need to do something radically different, I sit the children down and I give them a good explanation of what is going to take place before it happens. Do you think that that's a good idea for parents to do?
Oh, absolutely, especially once kids get into their teens. I mean, they're sharp. They're sharp human beings. They know what's going on, and they're also there slowly asserting their independence. So if you all of a sudden change the rules of the game, well, there's going to be major pushback. But if you can sit down with them, explain to them what the problems are, what changes you're going to make, and why they're going to be beneficial for them. And they still are probably not going to like it, but at least they'll have some basic understanding of, okay, my mom and dad are doing this because it's best for me. And the tough part, though, is that what happens is you get into these battles of will. And that is exhausting. Kids have more energy than we do. But parents, if they decide to make that change, they have to stay committed no matter what. And no matter how hard it is, no matter how much their kids yell at them or say mean things or try to push back, they need to have that level of commitment that will keep them on the road that they want to be on.
Okay, so you would say the key for parents wanting to make some changes is to just communicate with your kids what you are intending to do and why it's going to be beneficial for everybody. So you'd say the key is really in communicating these things?
Well, two parts of it. First is the communication, explaining the new rules, the changes that are going to occur, and then the absolute resolve to follow through on those changes no matter what, all the time, consistently, firmly, without any let-ups.
That's right. Let me tell you something funny about follow through, Jim. And this might be a bit embarrassing because in 18 years of parenting, I still haven't got everything right. I only had 3 kids at home last night, and we've been having battles lately about doing the dinner dishes. I made a lovely dinner, and then I had 3 children that didn't want to do the washing up. And I said to them that if they didn't get the washing, drying and putting away done and the bench clear, that there would be no breakfast served in the morning, that nobody would be eating. And I went to bed like I didn't say, you wash, you dry, you put away. I just said, I'm off to bed now, kids. I went to bed. I woke up this morning at 6 o'clock and the dishes weren't done. So I got my sticky tape and I sticky taped up the fridge and I put a note on the fridge to say no breakfast will be served.
Right.
So, I mean, it was really hard for me to follow through on what I had said to the children. But, you know, the dishes are done now because they got up and they all got hungry.
Sure, sure. And kids need to realize that their actions have consequences, and that if parents have an expectation of them, then if they don't follow through, well, that's their choice. They don't have to. But then in the case of your kids, then they're not going to get any breakfast.
It's really hard, though, as a parent sometimes to follow through. And, like, it kind of, it was really, really difficult for me. But I thought, no, this is what I said. And, I mean, as a parent, the expectation is that our children will help out to some extent. And if I'm spending an hour cooking a beautiful meal, the least my children can do is do the washing up so that I'm not preparing and cleaning up. So that's something that is still a bit of a thorn in my flesh, Jim. I'm still working through, because my kids seem to spend time saying, well, I washed some, but he needs to wash some now. And that they just don't quite get it yet. They're still getting there. It's like, well, he's supposed to do that because I've already done that. So I guess every family is a work in progress, hey?
Nobody is the perfect family, no matter how they look from the outside. And every parent has struggled and will struggle with these battles of will that they have with their kids. But what's most important is that you win those battles of will. Because if you don't win them, your kids lose. They might win those battles, but they lose the war.
Yep.
And that takes a level of commitment, because it's tiring. Tim, one of the most dangerous words in parenting is expediency.
Mm-hmm.
And expediency means doing what's easiest for you.
Mm-hmm.
What's easiest for you is not what's best for your kids.
Yeah, yeah, okay. Now, does this hard work of creating a different culture ever finish, or does it keep going forever? You know, do we ever arrive, do you think?
Well, within a family, I suppose that we arrive when we send our kids off into the world, whether it's to university or to a job, because then they're adults, then they can make their own decisions and their own choices.
Yep.
And so I suppose when they get to be 18 or whatever age it might be, that's the point at which you hopefully can say, you know what, I did a pretty good job here, and now it's up to them.
Yep.
And that's not to say you let go of them completely. Hopefully you've got a relationship where you are still connected with them and still communicate and enjoy each other's company. But ultimately, that's sort of the yardstick. That's the measure by which you say how I did as a parent.
Mm-hmm.
And there are no perfect parents, and there are no perfect kids. I think that if kids can go out and reach some level of success, feel some degree of happiness or contentment in who they are, and also be good citizens to want to give back to the world in some way, then I think parents have done a pretty good job.
Great. So what would be the outcome if parents decide to be inactive and do nothing? What's this culture going to do to their children if they decide not to get on the boat and be proactive?
Well, I think kids are doomed, because if kids are battling popular culture and they're and the parents are on the sideline, the kids don't have a chance. They're going to be consumed by popular culture, and which means they're probably going to take on a lot of the values that I talked about earlier in the interview. And and for me, that's not a great outcome. And parents, I mean, the one thing they have control over, the one thing they need to take responsibility for, is the messages and the lessons that their kids get as the kids grow up. And, you know, if their kids don't turn out well because they are on the sideline, well, I've got no sympathy for them, because they didn't do their job.
Yeah.
And I don't mean to sound too harsh or too unsympathetic, but my approach in my work as a psychologist, when I speak to parents, as well as with my own kids, is I'm tough. Because we live in a tough world. But tough doesn't mean being angry and controlling and negative. It means knowing what's best for your kids and doing what's best for them, whether they like it or not, or whether you feel like it or not. Because going back to that notion of expediency, it's much easier to just let your kids, you know, watch whatever they want on TV or listen to whatever music or play whatever video games or hang out with whoever they want. That's the easiest thing to do.
Yes.
But the question is that in their best interest? And when parents make these choices, that's the question they need to ask. Not what's in my best interest as a parent, but what is in the best interest of my children? And even if it's hard on me, I'm going to try to do what's in the best interest of my kids. Because when that kid came out of the mom, that's the job we signed on for.
We sure did. Well, Jim, this has been really, really great talking to you this morning. Please tell everybody here how we can get hold of your books and products and what website you have, because I'm sure some parents really want to look further into this.
Sure. My website is www.drjimtaylor.com. That's drjimtaylor.com. On my website, I have a couple things that would be interesting to them. I have a blog where I blog on many different issues, including parenting. I have a newsletter called Kids and Culture Alert, which on my homepage people can sign up for. Every other month, it's free. I take one topic related to parenting, and I write about it, and I send it out in an email.
Okay.
Parents can opt out anytime they want.
Mm-hmm.
If they're interested in my parenting books, there's access, there are links to them, as well as descriptions of the books. They're on Amazon in the U.S. and in North America. My guess is you can get them on Amazon Australia or where anybody else is listening. They can get them through their local bookstores or online.
Mm-hmm.
And throughout my website, there are all kinds of articles of many different types related to parenting as well as other issues as well that they have plenty of access to. And I also encourage people. One thing I love about doing these kind of international interviews is that I'll get an email from somebody from Australia or from England or from Asia asking me a question. And I love being able to connect and reach out in that sort of very global way that because of this new technology, we couldn't have done that 10 or 15 years ago.
Right. Awesome. Okay, well, so that's drjimtaylor.com, and I'm sure a lot of listeners will want to go there and take a look. Well, Jim, I just want to say thank you so much for your time, well, this morning for me, this afternoon for you. I've really enjoyed talking to you, and I'll have to keep in touch down the track.
Very good, Kim. It's been a great pleasure.
Thank you very much. Bye for now.